Welcome to another episode of Know Your Ombud. This is a series of conversations aimed to help you, as a consumer of financial services, understand your rights and where to go if you are not treated fairly. The financial ombud schemes include the FAS Ombud, the JSE Ombud, the Pension Funds Adjudicator, and the National Financial Ombud, all of which are overseen by the Ombud Council. Lodging a complaint with an ombud is free, and you do not have to appoint a lawyer. Let's be honest, there is not much in life that you can get for free. In each episode, we speak to one of the lead ombuds to understand the cases they deal with and how the ombud adjudicates complaints. We examine cases where the ombud has ruled in favor of the consumer and those that go in favor of the financial institution. This helps to explain our rights and responsibilities. The National Financial Ombud is responsible for handling complaints from customers of banks, credit providers, short-term and long-term insurance. And today, our focus is on banking, and we're chatting to Nirosha Massetti, Lead Ombud for the Banking Services. Welcome, Nirosha. It's lovely to get to see you in person. You and I have
We have
an email relationship.
Yes.
but lovely to have you here. And I think, Nirosha, you know, as a consumer financial journalist, what I can tell you is people love to hate banks. It is like everyone's pet, like hate is a bank. And I think as your role as arbitrator is really, really important to be seen as someone who can sit there and really understand the nuances of it, have a look and give the consumer the confidence that their issues are going to be resolved. And when I was preparing for this discussion, there was a TikTok video that was sent to me about somebody who was claiming that one of the banks is a scamsters and they take it right to the top. But what was so interesting for me was all the comments underneath, people saying, I also have been fleeced by my bank this, my bank that. And I commented saying, if you're unhappy with your bank, why haven't you approached the ombud? That's what I want to talk to you about. When do people come to you? When does somebody come to, in this case, it'd come to the NFO, but it would land up on your desk being the lead for the banking services. When should they come and complain?
It's great to finally meet you in person. And I think, yes, you're absolutely right. I think banks often find themselves in a spotlight, especially on social media platforms, where emotions run high. And I think that is why the role of the NFO is so important, because we are able to resolve disputes in a fair, impartial manner. And most importantly, we are able to give you the opportunity to rebuild trust between the bank and its customer. So in terms of when do people come to us, I think they come to us after they feel that they have no recourse in terms of already taking it up with their bank, didn't really hear anything back, or not happy with the response that they got on the complaint. And at that point, they then seek our assistance and lodge a complaint with our office.
And one of the things that I sometimes actually get confused about is when does it fall under the banking ombud and when does it fall under credit? So if you have a complaint with your bank that relates to a loan, for example, or the interest calculated on the loan, would that fall under you or would that be falling more under the credit ombud side?
So essentially, the banking division deals with all credit, bank-related credit. And the credit division deals with all non-bank related credit. It's just that simple. So if it's credit that is advanced or given by the bank, then the banking division will consider those matters. And any non-bank credit will then be considered by the credit division of the NFO.
So if you're handling the credit side as well, can you review, and this is one of the, because I was reading all those complaints,
yes.
You know, can you review the interest charged on loans? Because there's a lot of people feel that it's been miscalculated. They say, I feel like I've been paying this loan forever and it's not going down. Is that something that you are able to look into?
Absolutely. We have dealt with the numerous complaints in respect of that issue. It is something that we do look into. We would typically ask the bank for the contract in terms of the credit agreement to have a look at what interest rate was agreed upon. We'll then call for the statements of the account to have a look at how it was calculated. So it's definitely matters that we do look into. And if we find something untoward, then we take it up with the bank and find an amicable resolution.
And the other one I pick up as well is reckless lending cases.
Yes, yes.
So can that be brought to you as well?
Absolutely. So we have dealt with a number of reckless lending cases over the years. I think the important thing to say there is that it's very rare that we find an agreement actually being granted recklessly. And in the instance that we do find it, that it possibly, listen, this one doesn't look too kosher to us, we then take it up with the bank. Because remember, we look into whether the bank adhered to the provisions of the NCA in terms of the granting of the credit and the affordability assessment. And if we find there's something a little bit not too above board, then we engage the bank and then we try and explore the options that are available in terms of the Act. So reckless lending is definitely a type of complaint that we can definitely look into.
And I think, Roja, that's why I wanted to have this conversation with you, because I don't think people realize the reach that you have.
Yes.
I mean, you have so many, yes, you can have service complaints, but you can also look at interest calculations. You can look at reckless lending. And I find for a lot of the cases, people don't know that they can come to you for that.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that's really, really important.
Absolutely. And I must say, Maya, as much as there are bank customers that come to us, there are a lot of banking customers that don't know about the existence of the office. So in terms of creating awareness, it is a work in progress. I mean, it's something that we are prioritizing as the NFO. In terms of reckless credit, what I must say, in instances, it's important to note that only a court or the National Consumer Tribunal can declare a credit agreement reckless. So in instances where we find, listen, there's no anything funny happening here, we do advise the consumer in our assessment that should you remain unhappy, please note that you can approach these bodies.
Absolutely. I think it's important to know that there is always a process. There is an escalation process that that can also
100%
happen.
100%, yes.
So it's not just ending with you.
Yes.
If you're still unhappy, you can go and take it further. And I think that, you know, again, this is so much about, I just want people to know that they are empowered, that they don't have to go and do
Absolutely.
TikTok videos.
Absolutely.
That they can go and actually get their issues resolved.
And considered.
As I said in the intro, we're looking at cases that have gone for the consumer and also where you've ruled, you know, towards the financial services provider. But I want to start with one that I thought was very interesting for me. It was around a banking fraud where somebody had compromised their bank account and money was stolen. But before we, and you ruled actually in favor of the consumer here, but before we get into this particular case, I am getting so many of these cases coming to
yes.
me where somebody has, for example, I actually wrote a piece on it recently. He downloaded unknowingly downloaded malware onto his app, onto his phone. Mm. They were able to access his banking app and they cleaned it out. What is generally the view of the Ombud in a case where a consumer has compromised their banking details or put, you know, allowed a virus, for example, like that onto their phones?
I think the first step in answering that question, Maya, is to understand that the relationship between the bank and the customer is one that sits in contract. So when we're looking at liability, we will look for any negligence or wrongdoing on the part of the complainant in negligent in the sense that you downloaded malware or your device was not updated with the latest software, or you knowingly or unknowingly compromised your confidential banking information. So in instances where we can, on the evidence, we can make a finding on a balance of probabilities that there was a compromise on the part of the consumer or the banking customer, then the general position is that liability will sit with the customer. However, having said that, I think it's important to understand that the banks also have obligations and each case is assessed on its own merits. So on the side of the bank, in terms of that contract, they have an obligation to ensure that they provide safe and reliable banking services, that they are able to provide, that they have proper fraud detection and prevention systems in place, that they have processes in place, that they are able to quickly respond to fraud and stop that accounts and mitigate the losses. So in answering your question, I think it's important to understand there's two legs of the investigation. The first leg would be, where did the compromise happen that allowed the person to gain unauthorized access to your account? If we find, listen, there's a compromise on part of the customer, then that will resolve the merits part of it. Then the second leg of the investigation is to look at what time did the customer report the fraud to the bank? Did the frauds? Did the bank systems flag this account? If not, why? Did the bank stop the account within reasonable time? Reasonable time often depends on the specific facts of the case. And interestingly enough, most of our findings in favor of the complainant in the digital fraud space happens in the mitigation leg of the investigation, where we find that the bank could have done more to stop those accounts or could have done more in terms of their response to the flagging, or following the money. Because remember, as you know, Maya, it's no longer just being deposited into one account. That money goes through quite a few accounts through different banks. So I think in answering that question, there's obligations on both parties. And depending on the specific facts of the matter, sometimes we actually, in the mitigation space, make a recommendation that the bank has to refund in full because of the failure to respond timely.
And, you know, I've seen those judgments, which is very, very interesting. I think I saw one about 2 months ago, exactly in that case, when you went in, because you can go and call for those timestamps. You can go and call for all of that information. You have that authority.
Yes.
And then you can say, well, actually, we don't feel you acted quickly enough. But where the bank has acted as soon as possible, but the money has already left because they were notified after the money had moved through various accounts, it gets a little bit more, it gets tricky. And I just think it's going to be a continuous issue we have because fraud is just prevalent, especially
Absolutely.
On the banking apps.
Absolutely.
So I think this is going to be a space that, certainly wearing my consumer hat, it is about education. It is about, you know, speaking to the banks about how much more they can protect vulnerable, especially vulnerable consumers. This particular case I was dealing with was a pensioner.
Yes.
And I look at my mom, she's very vulnerable to these attacks. So, but anyway, a conversation you are going to be having ongoing, I think.
Maya, I get these updates daily from my parents in terms of the vulnerable consumer perspective. So I'm fully aware.
Yeah, absolutely. But I want to go back to this particular case because it was quite an interesting one. In this case, yes, the consumer had compromised their banking details, but the criminals had transferred from his paid-up mortgage loan account to his credit card. And then they used the credit card and they were able to access all the funds in the credit card. Why did you rule in this case in favor of the customer?
Okay, so in this particular case, like correctly pointed out by you, the customer compromised. The evidence showed that he compromised his information, gave away the keys to the kitty, so to speak, and then unauthorized access was gained to his digital platform. Then what transpired is that funds were moved from his bond account to his credit card account and then onto third-party fraudulent accounts. So when the matter came before the ombudsman, during the course of our investigation, we ascertained that the funds that were moved from the mortgage bond account to the credit card account were actually paid up funds because the customer actually settled the mortgage loan agreement prior to the repayment term ending. So that actually dictated the rest of our investigation because we had to consider whether at the time the fraud happened, should those funds have been available to move in terms of transfer to the credit card. So when we looked into the matter and we engaged the bank on the matter, the bank advised the office that at the time of the loan agreement that concluded, an access facility was initiated on that account. And that at the time when the customer settled the bond and paid it up in full, I think he definitely did it prior to the his contractual repayment term, that when he did that, he didn't give instructions to cancel or close the bond account. And that was their explanation for why access was possible. They then went on to explain to us that the product rules for the specific product allowed access to the repaid funds and also allowed access to the full loan amount. And this access was, according to the bank, even after the repayment term had ended, that access was granted. And that's why, according to them, the instruction in terms of cancellation or closure from the customer was important. So the next step of the investigation would have been great. Thank you for your submission. But we would need the product rules to confirm that what you're saying is what happened. And they were unfortunately not in a position to retrieve that document. So then we had to consider the loan agreement itself and similar in terms and conditions of similar products to ascertain how does this product work and generally what is acceptable practice. And after doing so, Maya, it was our finding that the funds should not have been available at the time of the fraud. This was based on the fact that our position was that the mortgage bond is very accessory in nature to the mortgage loan agreement. There are two agreements that cannot stand independent of each other. So the position of the office was that when the customer settled that bond, the obligations in terms or the banks, remember the mortgage bond is there to secure to protect the bank's rights. All of that fell away. So the finding of our office on that matter was that when the customer settled that bond, that was the end of the mortgage loan agreement and any access facility that he had. And that access to that funds should have not been granted. So that was the recommendation to the bank. And they accepted our recommendation and actually reimbursed the amount in full.
What I found interesting in that was that they couldn't provide the product rules.
Yes.
And so much of that is that you as the bank has an obligation to be able to prove and show what the product rules were. And if they can't, then you can't, you know, they can't just sort of say, well, that's what it was, but we can't really prove
absolutely.
It to you. And I think that's the kind of, you know, that's the kind of thing you will look at. You will say,
absolutely.
Where is it written? Where is the product?
We as the Ombudsman's Office cannot accept bare allegations on either party. Whoever alleges something, they must be able to provide supporting documentation and evidence to allow us to make a finding on a balance of probabilities. So yes, when we were informed that they were unable to provide the product rules, then we moved on to considering the evidence that we did have. So yes, absolutely important. If you make an allegation, you must be able to support that allegation.
And also just what I want to add to this is consumer protection is not linking your mortgage to your banking app. I mean, that has actually
absolutely.
Come up a lot in many of these fraudulent cases, because you could be in a situation where he was in some sense fortunate that it was paid up. But in my case, for example, if I linked mine and I have an access bond and it's still active, they can go in and they can take the funds out of there. So it's very important, I think, as a consumer to not necessarily link your mortgage onto your banking app, given the levels of fraud, or hide them. You know, you've got the ability to hide your certain accounts on your banking app. And I just think I want to put that out as a warning, because I don't think people realize they won't always be so lucky.
The consequences. Yeah. And interesting enough, we've had a number of those type of complaints as well, where the access to the bond was there. It was not a paid up bond. And the account is actually appearing on the app and funds were moved. And the sad part of that is the customer is then left being obligated to repay the sum, because there's no grounds to make a finding that the bank settled that loss.
Yeah, and I think it's important, just I don't want everyone listening to what you just said saying, oh, yes, I can go get my money back. This was a very, very specific case.
It was a very specific case. I think thank you for raising that. It was a very specific case, and the finding was based on the specific facts of that case. So it's important.
I think, to me, what also highlights is how much work the Ombud goes into in analyzing the case. I mean, that's a lot of work. You could so easily have said, oh, well, you know, you had linked your account and all the rest. You went and said, where are the product rules?
Absolutely.
No product rules. How do we apply it? And that's why I wanted to use that case as an example in our discussion today, because I want to, as we were saying, it's important for consumers to feel that the Ombud is there to be fair.
They're not
captured by industry, as I sometimes get.
And the thing is, I think it's important to your point, is that we do not just sit there just looking at your version and the bank's version. As we investigate the matter and more issues come to light, then we dig deeper and the investigations gets more complicated.
I want to move to a case where you did not rule in the favor of the consumer. And funny enough, I get this complaint I've had a few of these complaints. So this was about car financing. And it kind of highlights for me this common misconception that when a bank finances a car, it is suddenly now responsible for the relationship between the consumer and the dealership, which is, you know, really not true. They just simply give the financing. What you've agreed with the dealer, and if the dealer sells you a dud car, that's your problem. I actually often have complaints by people saying, oh, my car broke down within 6 months. I had to write it off. I couldn't drive it again. And I want the bank to repay me. But no, that's got nothing to do with the bank. The bank simply financed
100%.
The car. It's between you and the dealer. So in this case, the customer was upset because they discovered that the agreed final purchase price was higher than what the dealer had said to him verbally. So he said something verbally, and when it came to financing the car, he hadn't read the documents that were sent through to him, to the customer, and he simply sent it to the bank. Now, the bank didn't know about the conversation that he'd had with the dealer. So the bank got a document with an amount, paid it out, and the consumer realized a while later that more than he thought it was.
So I think that case illustrates some very important points to remember. That in that scenario, and we also get a lot of those complaints, there's two agreements. There's the sale agreement that's existing between you and the dealership, and there's a finance agreement containing the rights and obligations between you and the bank. So in that scenario, the customer failing to read the document and be sure that what he agreed verbally with the dealership was what was contained in the finance agreement, where he was negligent. So in that instance, the bank cannot be held liable. The bank received a document, the bank didn't have privy to the discussions you had in concluding the sale agreement and approve the finance. So I think it brings to light the importance of reading and understanding a document. We as consumers have to take these things seriously. And in terms of getting into and concluding contracts, it is our obligation to ensure that that document contains what we agreed to and what we want.
And I think that's it. We've spoken about rights, but this is responsibility.
Yes.
We can't just hand out all our responsibility onto everybody else.
Absolutely.
You know, if you are signing, if you put your signature to something, you know, read it. And if there's something in there that you don't understand, find out what it is. You can't just sort of say, oh, well, I didn't know.
Absolutely. You know, and that didn't help that consumer at all, especially he didn't pick it up, I think, only years later. And by that time, the dealership had closed down. So it was very unfortunate, but there was no basis in terms of merits to hold the bank liable for his...
I mean, what's interesting in that case for me is both that he hadn't read the documents before he signed them and he didn't notice for like 2 years.
Absolutely.
That it was the wrong amount.
He was paying for this higher amount for 2 years.
Yes, so. And I, you know, sometimes I do get frustrated because I think consumers don't pay enough attention to their money. But anyway,
yes.
That would be a good example of go pay attention to your money. You know, it really does matter. So just to sum up, based on sort of the complaints that you receive, what is the one thing that you want consumers to know, both about their rights, but also about their responsibilities?
I think the question is twofold. In terms of their rights, they have a right to be in a position where they clearly understand the terms and conditions of the products and services that they are purchasing. They have a right to ensure that the consultant who is assisting them makes them aware of the risks of the product and services that they are purchasing and the cost implication of the products and services. And in terms of their obligations, I think it's very important that they ensure that they understand the terms and conditions of those contracts before signing those contracts. It is also very important that in terms of the digital banking space, or any banking confidential information, that they know they should not and must not disclose that information to a third party, because that will lead to a compromise. And I think overall, I would also like them to know that they have a right to redress. They have a right to take up the complaint with their bank. And if they feel unhappy or they do not receive a response, they have a right to come to the ombudsman to have access to an alternative dispute resolution platform.
Absolutely. And I think that's a good note to end on. And thank you very, very much for joining us today. And to our listeners, please make sure that you catch up on all my other discussions with the various ombuds so that you can understand your rights. And remember, the National Financial Ombud is a free service. So if you feel that you have been treated unfairly, please don't waste your money on a lawyer or going onto social media. Go and contact the Ombud. It is a free service.